Ever a guy ever walk down the street and see all those blonde-haired women? I've done it a couple times just to razz people. I say, "Hey, Blondie!" 3 or 4 women will turn around, wondering who's addressing them. Now, the 7 dwarfs had nicknames. Anybody here memorize them? Can any of you tell me the 7 dwarfs? Boy, in Tampa there was a lady that could, and I was really surprised. But they go like this: Grumpy, Dopey, Doc, Sleepy, Sneezy, Happy, and Bashful. And that was kind of tell us what those dwarfs were to be like. So I ask you about nicknames, and maybe you have one, maybe you don't. But are you proud of your nickname? And beyond that, are you proud of your name if you do not have a nickname? There's a man in the Bible that, in my thinking, has a nickname. When you read through the occasion in 1 Samuel 25, you'll also see that his name was maybe given to him that way. His name is Nabal, N-A-B-A-L. Now, Nabal was kind of a churlish man. And when you turn into 1 Samuel 25, we can read a little note here and there through the chapter just to get a little context. 1 Samuel chapter 25. It's a long chapter. He comes on the scene, as it says in verse 1, after Samuel died. And in verse 3, there was a man of the name of the man was Nabal. And the name of his wife was Abigail. And she was a woman of good understanding and of beautiful countenance. But the man was churlish and evil in his doings. Now David heard that in the wilderness that this Nabal was shearing his sheep. He was getting ready for that time to harvest the wool. And so he sent some of his men down there to say, "You know, Nabal, we would like a favor from you." And so his young men went down there, David's young men, and they talked to Nabal's young men and said, "Would you please tell your master that we've done a lot of things to kind of help you, and would you mind repaying the favor by letting us enjoy a little bit of what you're harvesting there? Give us a goat or two, a lamb or two, a sheep or two." And so when they found this out, and Nabal then heard of the request, he answers in verse 10. He answered David's servants and said, "Who is David and who is the son of Jesse? There's many servants nowadays that break away every man from his master. Shall I then take my bread and my water and my flesh that I have killed for my shearers and give it unto men whom I do not know, and I don't know where they've come from?" He was interested in very much keeping what he had. So when David's men heard this and they turned around and went back to the camp to tell David, he really got kind of flustered immediately. And it says in 13, he told every man to go get his sword, and they girded on every man his sword. And so they went 400 men strong to wipe out the house of Nabal. He left 200 to look after the camp. Now in 14, Nabal's wife comes on the scene, Abigail. And when she heard what had happened, one of the young men telling her, she said, she heard that David had sent messengers out of the wilderness to salute her master, and he railed on them. "But these men have been very good for us. We were not hurt, neither missed we anything, as long as we were conversant with them when we were in the fields. They were a wall unto us, both by night and day, all the while that we were with them, keeping the sheep." In this story, nicknames become part of the story. There's Nabal, which means foolish. And there's Abigail, and we can call her Abby. And there's David, and we can call him Dave. And so these three have an interaction with each other. When Abigail heard what was coming down the road, 400 men with their swords to wipe out the household. She says in 18 that she took quickly 200 loaves of bread, 2 bottles of wine, 5 sheep ready dressed, 5 measures of parched corn, 100 clusters of raisins, 200 cakes of figs, and laid them out, going there. And she told them, get on up there with all of this stuff. I'm going to come after you. But she didn't tell her husband Nabal. Well, this goes on, and she finally says in 25, let not my Lord, I ask you, regard this man of Belial, even Nabal. For he is a name as he is. Nabal is his name, and the folly is with him. But if I'm your handmaid, I saw not the young men of my Lord whom you did send. I didn't see them. Let me make good on this. And so the story goes on, and she pursues the interest of peace so that David's 400 men wouldn't slay her household. And she goes about it in a very discreet way, and she fashions a peace. Now, as she fashions that peace, David then backs down from his warm temper. He makes good on what is can happen and enjoys what is given to him. And they go back to their camp. And finally, after a period of time, Abigail tells Nabal what she had done. And this is so striking to him, he has a stroke, and 10 days later he dies. Now, Joy and I have been in the elder care business for some time, and it's very typical that after a severe stroke, a person will live about 10 days. It's a very real-life situation to my experience. When she finally saw this take place, she was then free to marry, and David asked her, and she became his wife. Now, as you know that story, and maybe I've even bored you with it because it's an easy story. It's a child's story. There was a difference between Nabal and Abigail, wasn't there? There's many answers that you could phrase or come up with as to what was happening, but there's something very important, and I want to fashion the answer that I have for you into this Feast of Tabernacles in the 8th day that we're practicing. She saw life as a whole. She saw where life would take her. She saw that she would not have life if everything considered to happen went marching down the road and she and all of her family died. But the two men in the story, Nabal and David, they saw life in this story, even including David, only in parts. They saw immediately what was before them. Nabal says, who's this guy that he wants my stuff? And David's quick reaction says, this guy I'm going to kill and take all of his stuff. And in the midst is this woman who could see that these two guys were not really understanding what would happen at the very end, why they were in their attitudes. She saw where it could all end up, and she had a full appreciation for the whole of life and really considering where it would take her. Now, this woman is seen as a heroine, and she single-handedly stopped a slaughter from occurring. She was not an Amazon superhero. She didn't have slings like David had used to slay Goliath. She didn't have bazookas like our armed forces have had in some times past. She was kind. She was feminine. She was humble. She was wise in her view. She praised David and stopped him from shedding blood in this instance. Vengeance was averted. She showed us the importance of forward thinking. Think about, oh boy, this guy, no. Oh boy, it doesn't look good. Why is all of this happening? She wasn't bogged down with the here and now. She was focusing on the future. She wanted a future for herself and her family. And that is a very important part of why you should be here today. And for these coming days, focusing on the future. David and Nabal were not focusing their attentions on seeking their kingdoms. They were, in fact, inciting riot. It is important for us to live rationally, aware that you never know when the end might come. Ecclesiastes explains that there is wisdom in considering the end, knowing why you are alive. The book is filled with tremendous thought. In Ecclesiastes, right after Proverbs, Song of Solomon, we find in Ecclesiastes chapter 9 and 10 some extremely sage comments that bring us into the reality of where we are today. It says in 9:1 that we all start as a blank slate. For all this I considered in my heart, even to declare all this, that the righteous and the wise and their works are in the hand of God. No man knows either love nor hatred by all that is before him. You start without a knowledge of love and hate. But what gets poured in? You find that there are things that happen in life, and so the blank slate is filled with chalk marks. All things come alike to all. Every one of us have the same road to walk, with the same rocks being thrown in the road. And all of these people that we pass in the city and that help us out in taking care of us during this feast here, serving us, we all have the same rocks. We all have the same opportunities to stumble. But you're here. Why are you here? The sageness of Mr. Armstrong asked that question time and time again. And let's darken the door then of why are we here? Abigail knew why she was where she was and why she wanted to continue. It seems the men that were in her company didn't understand that. David and his group, Nabal and his family. There's one event that righteous and to the wicked, to the good and to the clean, to the unclean, to him that sacrifices and to him that sacrifices not, to him that is good and to the sinner, he that swears and he that fears to even say an oath. We all have the same road. Some of us deal with it in different ways. Why do you do what you do? Let's look at verse 3. There is evil among all things that are done under the sun. That there is one event unto all, yea, also the heart of the sons of men is full of evil. But there's one event that holds us all in common. With the girls that serve you coffee in the rooms out there, to the people who took your money at the desk, to the bus driver that brought you here, to the people flying the aircraft that brought you across the seas. We all have the same thing in common. And that's another thing Joy and I got to understand very deeply. Our work was often with hospice. People die. I've never known anyone to live and live and live. But you are alive tonight. Why? There's madness in some hearts as they live, and after that they go to the dead. For to him that is joined to all the living there is hope, but for a living dog is better than a dead lion. Now you could be roaring and boisterous and shaking your mane and have all the appearance, but it may not be why you are doing those things that you've considered. For the living know not they that shall die, but the dead know not anything, neither have any more a reward. Even their memory is forgotten. Now there's some great Herods out here. It will be sometime in your future that you will cease. You will die. And every one of us in this room will die. From my youngest friend, Fitzmore Benjamin, that I know here. He's 8. That young boy will eventually grow. And he will die. My father died a year ago and a month. 93. For 10 years, my wife and I showed people love and concern and care until the end when they died. Now you're here. Why are you here? Why do you have life? Why have you found yourself tripping across the planet to come here? Is it because there's free liquor? Is it because it's your vacation and you really haven't admitted it to yourself? Is it because you can have your family together? These can be some interesting times for families. It's a wonderful time. It goes on and tells us some of the issues of life. So that's why he says in 10, whatever your hand finds to do, do it with your might. Know why you are doing something and do it with your full strength, your full commitment. In chapter 10, dead flies cause the ointment of the apothecary to send forth a stinking savor. Why is it that you leave something out, it spoils overnight? And then it stinks. And you run to put it down the drain or throw it out in the trash or to get it out of the house. Why is it that when you go home, some of you have forgotten to clean out your potato pantry? And you'll find one stinking rotten potato in there and the whole thing's a mess. Seeping and whipping and all this stuff on the floor. And you even got to get out the Clorox to clean it up. Everything dies. And when it's a death, there's stink. And so there's a comparison that he that does a little folly, him that is in reputation for wisdom and honor, a wise man's heart is at his right hand. A fool's heart at his left. I think Paul remembered that when I told him some of the things that are in God's Word. Going on to the end of the chapter 10. It says in 16, woe to you, O land, when your king is a child and your princes eat in the morning. Blessed are you, O land, when the king is the son of nobles and your princes eat in due season. For strength and not for drunkenness. We have this to consider in our time frame. God, who assigns every leader to its position, is in charge of watching us fail because we will not ask Him for forgiveness. And that opportunity is for all mankind. And each of us then have to ask, why has He asked us? And are we answering the question? Why? You Americans will remember Penn State and Sandusky. Why? The gratification. Why? Where does it leave the coach of the state, of Penn State? What reputation is left of him who then died? a school, a coach have been ruined by aberrant, licentious behavior. And you and I need to be remembering things that people don't ask why they're doing it, and be separate from that kind of activity. You see, the system is coming to the end of its days. Egypt is either regenerating or disintegrating, and the Middle East is doing the same thing together. But they don't ask why. Why are they doing it? Why do they fight against each other? What is the sense of that? Now, the fall feasts of God's eternal prophesy that the fulfillment of God's irrevocable covenants is going to come to its fulfillment. He's made covenants with mankind, and the covenants, the promises, the contracts that God makes with mankind will never fail. And He is going to bring His kingdom. For those who know why this time will come, it is refreshing and rewarding. If all you know about what you're doing covers other things, then you need to stop and think, why do I do what I do? As death is inevitable to all of us, as we see the church go through this ages and we find people lashing out and regenerating and finding ups and downs in the church of God, we need to think about why. Now, because I've mentioned funerals or death, I just ask you to maybe consider, when was the first funeral you ever experienced as a child? Mine was Grandpa Philip. He was very old. He was from Germany, had white hair, a slender man, piercing blue eyes. But he died. And all that I knew about death and understanding it started then, as I went to that little cemetery outside Scottsbluff, Nebraska, and he was buried. It's the first time I saw a casket. It's the first time I saw a graveside service. And that began to frame what I understood about death. What was a beginning fact for you to understand death? Who directs the course of man? Who is directing your course? Who is directing my course? As He directs the course of man, He's moving forward towards the coming kingdom. And to Him, that is very important. It is His most important gift that He wants. And then that conceivable covenant that He will fulfill for all mankind, what and when and where, is also very interesting. But why the kingdom? Why has God shown you these truths? There are some things that we do in life that we probably should take a better dimension of and really ask why. There are some things that we spend a lot of time with, they're ending up really kind of a spinning of our wheels. And when we're spinning our wheels, we really aren't asking why, we're just spinning. So many times we know who we are. We're the Church of God. We know where we want to go. We know where we are going, we think. And we find a lot of time, spent time searching for when. We spend a lot of time wondering when. But why is so often completely forgotten out of those questions? See, we all have to remember those 5 points of a theme paper. Remember high school, you want to forget it? You had to write that theme paper, that composition. And it was who, what, when, where, why. I'm not getting into how. But why? And when you're writing that theme paper, it's very important that you have all 5 of those. What does it teach you to take off? 20 points for every point that you don't cover? When, where, who, you know. Which of them do you give then so much excuse that the teacher says fail? Or 60% or 80%? Do we have it really? We're writing a theme paper that's 100%. You are writing a theme paper. Revelation 20, verse 15 says that there is a book of life. And in that book, there's going to be these five characteristics about you. Why is the most important thing to ask in everything? That is what this woman Abigail asked. Why are these people doing that? I'm going to do something to change the course. And that is what you and I are to do today. Ask why and change the course so that we know why and it is the right direction. We'll get ourselves involved with Sabbath discussion and what we're doing and this and that and how people behave and act. And we'll even forget why we're keeping the Sabbath. Become so consumed with do's and don'ts that why we are keeping the Sabbath disappears. The fall festivals, why do you go to the feast? I posed a few questions for you. Why have you brought your children to the feast? Because you don't have anybody at home to take care of them? I hear some will find that they're coming to an understanding of that more and more. There's new people with us here. Marriage. Why are you married? Oh, when I married Joy, why was not at the top of the list, I tell you that. As life has gone on, I've found out why is very important. I liked her. She liked me. She loved me. Now she tolerates me. And that's the mirror that we have for each other. You learn how to deal with each other's differences. Children. Why do you have children? I don't know. You know why. No, you only know how. But finally they come on the scene and you've got to decide, why am I going to do what? You know, I got this whole thing going. Well, the time is going to come when God will search to find if you know more than who you are and when you came into the knowledge of the truth. I've been around these ways for a lot of my life, but amount of time doesn't matter. I need to know why I'm doing what I'm doing. The question will be asked of every one of us eventually. Why? What is your purpose? Why are you here? Well, some nickname come to mind as he's looking at his book, and this book of life has this, they know this. What nickname will God have for you? Oh, she was too bashful. She was too hesitant to really ask why. She sat and she learned, but she just did stuff perfunctory. Some were too sleepy, always falling asleep when really they should have been asking why they were so lazy. He was too dumb, too dopey. They never tumbled to why. And I'm using the seven dwarfs here. She was giddy and having fun, never really asking why. Popular. Why do they wear the clothes they wear? Why do they use the language they use? Your theme paper will eventually be graded, and today, as you and I write them, and as we gather here, it's very important for you to remember the theme paper is being written. And in the gathering of ourselves together, and these three congregations of Jamaica, numbering around 50 to 60 people, they gather with us, and instead of their little clutches of 20 people or so singing hymns, they've got 200 people singing with them. And they'll take that momentum home for the year. And you'll take that same momentum with you. Many of our flocks are small. In that momentum, there has to be an answer to the question, why am I doing this? Your theme paper will eventually be graded. Will it say who, what, when, where, and why? What is your concept of why? Take time. Know why you are here.